Hello and welcome to this episode of the ESG Fitness Podcast. I have Andy and Ruth with me today. Andy, how are you?
I'm great, thank you very much. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks. Ruth, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. It's nice to be here.
Good. I like your background, the world map.
Yeah, we've got a couple of those. So this was one of the boys' bedrooms, and they have, well, my eldest has always loved. He was a bit, when he was little, he's autistic, this one. He was obsessed with flags and countries. And he just tells me where they are now. Even at 14, he still knows where all the countries are.
Wow, that's
I
such a
did.
little obsession. I was a
Yeah.
little bit obsessed with space when I was younger. And I used to be able to like recite all of the planets in order and like I'd be like telling that I was quite strange. Yeah.
Neurodiverse, maybe.
Yeah, well, it's probably that. Yeah. Zoe's also diagnosed me as autistic, which is nice.
I think it's a good thing. Hey, who wants to be the same as everyone else, right? Like,
It's a superpower. Yeah.
it can be. It definitely can be. And yeah, sometimes though it's when we get older and people start saying things like that to us, we're like, oh, maybe
Yeah.
I am.
Well, we were just having dinner. This was quite early on as well. I'd say we were like been dating for like 2 months or something. And she was just like, "Are you autistic?" Not that I know of, but never.
Although ADHD and
Oh,
autism
yeah.
together can cancel each other out a little bit. So if you are a female who's got ADHD, then you might not notice the autism symptoms as much, or the other way around.
Yeah.
But
And dyslexia as well.
yeah, see.
Oh, what a beautiful combination. How lucky. Anyway, I've made it this far and I intend
Doing
to,
all right.
yeah, doing all right, doing all right.
A
All right
superpower.
then, do we have questions?
We do. Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
It says doing home workouts because I'm far more likely to do them. That I have a bench, dumbbells, and bands, but no pull-up bar. Oh, this is about the workouts, chin-ups in some of the workouts. So, what can I substitute this exercise with? So, what can she do instead of chin-ups if she hasn't got a chin-up bar at home? I know we've done this one before, but I guess good to answer again.
Yeah, banded pull downs. There you go.
There you go. Banded pull downs
But
and
I do
any
like the
kind.
mindset of, do you know what? Probably not going to get to gym. So I'm gonna, what can you do? This. I was just thinking about this before actually, because I just did an episode which will probably come out tomorrow or the next episode on coaching principles. And obviously we talk about this all the time, right? But imperfect action. I genuinely attribute imperfect action to everything I've ever been successful at. Like, whether that's staying in shape year round, whether that's building businesses, like, genuinely, I'm like, it's imperfect action. And you just, like, from a very high level, it's essentially the mindset of, oh, I can't, like, do it perfectly. What can I do? Okay, there's not the optimal choice on the menu, or there's not the perfect set up for a workout. Okay, but what can you do? Because there's always something. And what most people do is use that, oh, I can't get to the gym, as an excuse not to do anything. Or, oh, look, there's no perfect thing on the menu. So do you know what? I'll just have to have a whole pizza. It's like, you go flip to these complete extremes instead of thinking, okay, I can't have that. And all there is pizza. Okay, why don't I have two slices and ask for a side salad? Like, what's the next best option?
Yeah.
Right. Next question.
Okay. It is one that Maureen's written. So I guess from a check-in, it says, "Does being on a low-fat diet like Slimming World do long-term damage? Does it long-term damage your metabolism? I followed the eating plan for about 12 years, and when I signed up to Body Coach years ago, was told that my calories would have to be lower than someone who had not been on a Slimming World plan." Whilst my body adjusted, thoughts on this? That sounds strange. But anyway, interesting.
Did she say body coach plan as in
Yes.
Joe Wicks?
I'm surprised they looked in that much detail.
I think his nutrition advice is now slightly better. it used to be really quite bad. And he sort of like dismissed that calories even existed, and it was just about like what you ate. And he put like a huge amount of coconut oil on everything, and it was just like real, like probably not what you want to be doing. There's absolutely no reason that a low-fat diet would wreck your metabolism. What probably will happen is that if the low-fat diet was successful, i.e., you lost fat, you lost body weight, you lost the total mass that you are, then your basal metabolic rate would reduce slightly because you're a smaller person, you need less calories. That's what would have happened. It's really got nothing to do with the fact that you went low fat. You could have done the same thing with a higher fat diet, going low carb. Like there's nothing to suggest that, aside from if you went very low protein and lost more lean mass, that the difference in carbohydrate to protein intake would have, sorry, carbohydrate to fat intake would have any impact on your metabolism. No.
I've not heard of, I didn't even think he did calories. I thought he did just focus on his meals. So I'm
Not
surprised by
sure
that.
he got, like, I actually, it's been a long time since I ever looked into it, but I know that there was this big thing about him, like saying that calories don't count. And then he kind of came out and said that they do. And then everyone called him out for that. And I was a bit like, didn't we want him to change his mind? Like, you can't be like, oh my God, look at all this misinformation. And then when he's like, oh, look, I was wrong. I mean, I think the point people are making is he didn't say I was wrong, but then he started talking about calories. But I'm like, right, but now he's giving out better information. You can't have it both ways, you know? You can't be like, God, that's such awful information. And then when they start putting out better information, be like, God, I can't believe he's changed his mind. Like, yeah.
But
Anyway.
we need something to complain about. So,
Oh, well, this is true. Sorry, I forgot. Yeah.
okay.
Yeah.
Well, are we moving? I feel like we're whizzing through. This is unusual. Anyway, next, listening to a podcast, not the usual problematic, lol, and they talk about anabolic training and trigger sessions to support these. Are these just bro terms for strength training? I do push pull legs full body sessions. So is the anabolic training? So is this anabolic training? Also, doing trigger sessions, what are these?
Andy, what do you think? Because I mean, I've not heard this specific podcast. I have a
No.
what I think it is, but I want to hear what you think.
It sounds like just hypertrophy, but they've changed the, you should call it anabolic. It sounds like it's, they're trying to use a different word than hypertrophy. And working there. Trigger sessions. Not a clue what that is, though.
Maybe like Emma Stim.
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking. Are they just like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the word anabolic just really means growth. So like, are your sessions anabolic? Yeah, you could call them that, I guess. I think a lot of people don't use that word because it's quite highly correl well associated with anabolic steroids. So that's why people like kind of tend to lean away from it. But yeah, anabolic just really means growth.
So here you go. Trigger sessions are what make anabolic training especially unique. Trigger sessions are mini sessions on non-foundational workout days that last 5 to 10 minutes and allow you to trigger your muscles a bit in between your main sessions.
Like a morning routine.
Just like the morning routine, yeah.
Yeah.
Or you're right, like the stim workouts. Like I just call it stimulate, not annihilate. It's the same kind of thing, like trigger sessions. I do think it's quite interesting because I think a lot of typical bro splits, right? And Andy and I love these. We love going in, and like I've been posting quite a few of them in the Commit Six group of like, here's my just insane volume arm session, which has like three different variations of bicep curls and drop sets and whatever, just because I love the feeling of training like that. Is it optimal for most people? Absolutely not, right? Because really what's happening, and what, and this will come back to what we're talking about, like you're not only triggering the stimulation of that muscle, but you're oversaturating it. Like the likelihood is, say I had put in, I don't know, three different bicep curl exercises and drop sets on them and stuff, likely probably half of that volume is probably maximized the muscle protein synthesis response to my biceps, right? Probably didn't need to do all the other volume on top of it, but I just kind of like the feeling of that, right? So at the other end of the spectrum is like minimum effective dose training. So like, what's the least you can do to stimulate that muscle so that the body's like, yes, it's been used. Yes, we're going to adapt to this stimulation, but you're not like pushing yourself to fatigue. And this is something that Ruth does really well, especially with perimenopausal clients, is like, right, we really need to think about minimal effective dose. What's the least you can do to optimize recovery that's still going to get you some response? Now, what happens after that, and you start adapting to it and you start feeling better, is you can add in more volume and you can recover better from that. I think we get this question all the time. I literally just had it in my question box of, I'm training, I think it was something, I'm training full body every other day. Is that too much? And it's like, is it too much for you? Are you recovering well? Are you seeing progress? Do you feel good? Because if you do, then fine. But if you don't, then you're probably not recovering. And the reason I bring this up is we work with so many perimenopausal women that aren't sleeping very well, that might not be on HRT or that have lower estrogen levels, so they don't recover quite as well, which means you need to meet people where they are. And even more on top of this, you know, people with chronic fatigue syndrome or who are just starting from a point where they need to slowly build themselves up. That might be post-surgery. There are so many situations, you know, like we work with a lot of breast cancer survivors as well. Like, you're not just going to jump people back into really heavy training, but that's not to say you won't get there. You just need to start where you are and push yourself a little bit outside your comfort zone until you adapt and that becomes your new comfort zone, and then you're going to push again. So don't think like two sides of this. Don't be like demotivated if you're like, oh, I don't always just want to do the bare minimum. And also don't be like demotivated that, I don't know, you've maybe tried an exercise program before and you're just like, I just feel absolutely exhausted on it. Yeah, because you were trying to stick to a plan that wasn't made for you based on where you are and what your capabilities are at the moment. And I can't emphasize this enough. And I want to make a big point about it because I put it on my story the other day. Someone had asked about like having really low energy levels and just feeling like so demotivated and that nothing was going to work for them. And so many people resonated with it. I'm like, this is exactly how I feel. I just don't have the energy to get started. And it's because you need a starting point for yourself. There's no good, it's no good comparing yourself to like where you were before or what someone else is doing or, you know, some plan that wasn't made for you. Like, and genuinely, Ruth is fucking phenomenal at this. Like, this is literally like her jam. So if you are feeling like that, definitely reach out.
It can be really hard to get started. I mean, like it can be, but there is always that pushing point. I know you talk about this quite a lot. There is that safety in just doing what you've been doing, and that discomfort can be quite hard to push through. And it's not necessarily that we're asking you to do things that are unrealistic, because like I would always try and start people where they are. But even that sometimes can feel like a bit like, oh no, I'm really tired. Maybe today is not the day. Tomorrow's going to be a better day than today. And it might only be 5 minutes of exercise, but you normally, on the whole, feel so much better when you do start and you do it. So there's that discomfort that you do kind of need to push through just a little bit as well.
Yeah, and sometimes it's like symptoms or something, right? So again, with a lot of perimenopausal women, it might be, we know that the best thing you can do for menopausal symptoms is improve your diet and exercise. But the hardest time to do that is when you're struggling with symptoms. And this is why you need to start where you are. Just do a little bit. Like, that will start to compound over time. And just the right amount of exercise will give you more energy and will start to reduce symptoms and will start to make it more easy to take the next step, which might be a little bit more exercise or a little bit more steps or improving your diet in another way. And that you need to sort of build that momentum. I honestly think one of the best places to start is a morning routine, because it just sets you up for the day. It's not overwhelming. It only takes 10 minutes and it's so impactful. Yeah.
Excellent. Should I move on? Okay. Right. I'm not sure if you have already answered. However, if you don't weigh yourself, how do you know your calories are correct? Also, I have been tracking calories since November and have made good progress. I would like to move away from tracking as I'm in quite a good routine. I'm nervous though. Without this routine, oh, I'm nervous without the routine that I'll overindulge. Should I just keep tracking? I'm not yet at maintenance. I'm 11 stone and 5 foot 5 and would like to lose between 7 to 14 pounds, depending on the impact it has on my face. It can make me look older. There you go. How do you know the calories if you're not weighing?
So two things here. One, you'll know the calories because you're getting results, right? Weighing yourself is only one very crude and pretty inaccurate measure of results. But if you're also looking better, feeling better, performing better in the gym, your clothes fit better, maybe you do measurements if you want to, that's how you see progress. So if that's moving in the right direction, then you know that your calories are about right. The second thing I'll say is you kind of mentioned here, like, oh, well, if I don't have the routine, this is the fundamental problem when people stop tracking calories. They're like, woo, and no routine at all. I'm like, no. If you're not tracking, you actually need more routine, more consistency. Because if you know what you're doing consistently over time and you're not getting results, then we change what you're doing. If you're fluctuating so much all the time and there is no routine and there is no consistency, that makes it very hard to then change from that point. So if you're not tracking, then routine and consistency is more important, not less. And you do not need to track calories to have a routine.
It's for I'm like that. I went dieting just now and I don't track calories, and it's basically exactly as Emma said, as routine. My first two meals of the day are exactly the same every day. Like, genuinely, I don't change. I don't get bored with meals and stuff. And I think it's one of those ones where, as you said, people think that when you're stepping away to away from tracking that everything needs to change. No, it doesn't. You keep driving down on this the simple basics of getting in your protein, getting your fruit and veg in, and then a lot of it's just about tidying up portion control, depending on how you're feeling. If you're feeling that you're maybe gaining a little bit of weight, because you'll know yourself if things maybe feel a little bit tighter, or if you're going the opposite way, and as already has been mentioned, you know, if you can start to see it in your face, you maybe need to back off a little bit and add a little bit of calories back in again. So yeah, but definitely routine. It's the easiest way to stick within your set goal is by just consistently doing the same things.
Yeah.
3 to 1, isn't it?
Yeah, all the 3-to-1 method, yeah.
Yeah.
Or
Well,
any
but even
routine. I mean, like, the reason that that works is because there's routine within it, right? And like Andy was saying, there's nothing wrong with it, with having like the same or a variation of the same breakfast that you know is between 400 and 500 calories. Cool. Then if things stop working, hey, you know what to change, what to adapt.
it does make maintenance easier. I definitely like, even if you're tracking everything, if you're following the regular meals at regular times, fairly consistent with what they are, then it makes maintenance, like Andy said, so much easier because you're going to follow that format anyway, hopefully. But okay, next. There you go. We've got a couple more questions, just two more. When I was my leanest, I was eating huge amounts of food and still burning fat and looking lean. I was definitely not in a deficit. I see this with other women who say they start to eat more when they are close to fat goals. They keep training really hard and continue to get lean and lose more body fat. I need to understand how this works. Is it just that they're training harder and burning more? I was training hard. Okay, so she's talking about body fat and muscle. Yeah, changing.
Yeah, often when you see like influencer types saying this, like, oh, I increased my calories and I got leaner, a couple of things are potentially happening. One is that there's no disputing energy balance. If they're genuinely eating more calories consistently over time and getting leaner, they are in a deficit. So where they are, oh, but I'm eating loads, it's like, okay, well, then you're expending loads as well. The second thing is a lot of people lie. Just going to put that out there. Like, some people lie about these things. It's also people like hearing that, right? Like, how easy is it to sell? If I was like, guys, I eat 3,000 calories a day, I only do 10,000 steps a day, and I train 3 times a week, just sign up to Commit Six. I'll show you how to do it. Like, of course, people want to hear that, right? Like, people, and it is a little bit virtue signaling as well, because people are like, oh, you know, like women should be able to fuel themselves. And like, I'm sorry, but realistically, most women don't expend that much energy. Not saying they can't fuel themselves, but like basic maths, they don't need that many calories. That's why I speak about small women a lot, and knowing that maybe they don't need as many calories, and that there needs to be some more considerations around that. There was another point I was going to make. Oh yeah, the third thing is a lot of people do this for like a short period of time. They'll be like, I've increased my calories to 3,000 calories. And you're like, oh wow. And I'm like, how long have you been doing it? 2 days. Okay, cool. Like, obviously nothing's changed. It's been 2 days, right? Let's come back in 2 months of consistently consuming 3,000 calories a day and then see where you are. And if you've stayed the same or got leaner, then you've been around maintenance or in a slight deficit. Like, there's no secret to it. A lot of these people, again, remember, I mean, I never shouted about this, but when I first moved down to London, when I was a personal trainer, I think I did about 15 to 20,000 steps a day, every single day. I also trained twice a day, every single day, right? And I was eating like probably like 2,500 calories. I stayed ridiculously lean because I was exercising so much, right? Like, it's simple maths. And like, my whole day was moving weights around, training clients, walking around the gym, walking to work, walking back from work. We also worked like down all of these stairs. And I insisted on, when I got out at, oh, what was the tube station I used to go to? Anyway, it doesn't really matter, but there was like the most ridiculous amount of stairs to get up. And I was like, I'm taking the stairs every single day. Basically, my expenditure was really high. That's how I managed to eat that many calories. Like, there's no like secret behind it. Either they're not doing it consistently, they've not been doing it long enough to actually gain any fat yet, or they're lying. Or maybe they're taking anabolic steroids or some kind of fat, maybe not steroids, but like make some kind of fat burner, which like you raise your eyebrows at, but actually, as Andy knows as well, like isn't actually that uncommon in the fitness industry.
I was actually, weirdly enough, there was somebody put something up about females in the fitness industry. This is an American guy that I know, and a study that was done reckoned that over 60% of women are now taking stuff in America in gyms, which is crazy fucking numbers.
I know.
Yeah,
Yeah,
because
that's pretty scary.
this isn't something I've come across much with, you know,
What, they didn't
like
do that down in
no,
Devon?
but no, weirdly not, no, doesn't
Yeah.
not, well, not that I hear of.
There was always the chat as well about stuff like bikini girls taking insulin and stuff, which you're like, what the fuck are you doing? That's just madness, absolute madness. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's I think I find it quite hard because in some ways I'm like, we should talk about that stuff more so people can get more information about it. Like, you know, like bikini
Yeah.
girls shouldn't be taking insulin. But then part of me is also like, we should talk about it less so people aren't like, oh, if I want to look like that, then I have to take drugs, which it like
Yeah.
isn't true, especially not if you're a bikini girl. I mean, actually saying that, a lot of the bikini federations now are like jacked. Bikini used to be really soft, didn't it? It used to just be like a girl who had been to the gym a couple of times, but you know, didn't really work out that much. No,
Yeah.
like real visible muscle. And now they're like capped shoulders,
Yeah.
striated glutes.
Well, the one step up from like bikini now, I'm pretty sure, is wellness, and wellness is basically bodybuild. Like, that's they're absolutely jacked. So you're like, fucking, all right, it's a bit of a big step up. But as you said, yeah, bikini used to be basically step off the beach onto the stage, and there we go. And now it's a completely different thing. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, we don't work with competitors.
Crazy.
Did you compete, Emma? Did you ever do bikini?
No.
Did
Can
you?
you imagine me
No.
walking around on stage like that? Oh, do you know what? Saying like one of my, I really, really don't like being center of attention. Like, I could think of nothing worse than getting married for that reason, like walking down the aisle. Oh. No, like that's enough to genuinely stop me getting married ever. I'm like, I'd Hate it. But I love talking on stage. So I must also love the attention as well. Just it, like, I don't know, just in different situations.
The
Yeah.
information is the center of attention.
Yeah, it's less emotional, isn't it? The just standing and talking to people than putting yourself out there half naked, I
Yeah,
guess.
or that, well, I don't know. I think a lot of people would rather stand on stage in a bikini than have to speak. Like a lot, like it's people's biggest fear is like public speaking.
What about public speaking in a bikini?
It's
Yeah.
called IFS, is it
IFS.
not? Depending on where
Yeah,
it is.
well, it's in Ibiza this year, so
There
check
you go.
it in a
When?
bikini.
When?
Yeah.
There you go. Oh wow. There we go. Yeah. Right. We've got another question. We've got any tips for the mid-afternoon slump when I'm feeling picky?
What do you think, Ruth?
I would think about a couple of things because there's more than so have you eaten enough during the day? I find that I'm getting pickier in the afternoon when I've not had enough at breakfast or I've skipped lunch or I've had a smaller lunch and I've been kind of more on the go. So it might be that you actually just need some food, some actual food, or it could be what you're eating at lunchtime. If you're having like a higher carb lunch, then you might find that you're getting that slump and that tiredness. If you can move after you've eaten at lunchtime, I think that's quite a nice way of stopping that slump from happening, just controlling that blood sugar a little bit. But also plan in a snack for the afternoon, make it a decent one, like have some Greek yogurt with fruit or whatever in, but plan it in for that time of day so that you know that you've got enough to sustain you from your lunchtime until the evening, so that you're not forcing yourself or constantly thinking, I'm really hungry and I've got to wait until then. And then you're likely with that state of mind going to end up reaching for something that isn't optimal. So
Cream
plan
egg.
in. Oh, do you like them?
No, hate them.
No.
Oh, come on. Period.
Mini
It's
egg.
so sickly.
Boof.
It like the middle of it freaks me out a little bit.
Too sweet.
I also think it's because it's like things that are sticky. Oh, no, I don't like them. I
Yeah.
really don't like them. Saying that, I will eat a satsuma and that does get a little bit sticky. But thinking about having like a bit of cream egg, like goo on my fingers, like after I've eaten it or something, and then, oh no. Maybe I am autistic.
I was about to say exactly the same thing. I was like, oh, that sounds like a bit of sensory thing going on there.
Wait a minute.
Oh, I can't relate at all. The only thing I'll add, because I think that was great advice, is just to consider whether you're hungry or you're just a bit tired. Because often for me, I'm just a bit tired, right? And like every, I think the afternoon slump is actually just quite normal. I do think that personally, if I don't have a high carb lunch, then I tend not to slump so much in the afternoon. But the other thing I'll say is just like get outside, go for a little walk, or even sometimes if I'm like, oh God, like I don't know, I've had back-to-back Zoom calls or something, I need to wake up a little bit, I'll just get up and do some mountain climbers or walk around the flat or do a few pull-ups. And honestly, it makes such a big difference. Like really like wakes you up again. It doesn't have to be a lot, you know. Don't say, I'm not saying do a full workout, but like even like 10 push-ups or 10 squats, you know, something to get you moving again, really kind of like re-engages you. And then I'd also think about your environment, because I noticed that if it's about 3 or 4 p.m. and I'm a bit like, oh, and I'm at home, I will tend to snack and sometimes overeat a little bit. If I'm not at home or I'm just like kind of better set up, I've got like a good snack or something, like I'm way less likely to do that. And sometimes it doesn't even really matter. Like if I'm in a co-work or something, I just won't. because the immediate option isn't there. Like if I'm sitting in my kitchen working, that's a little bit harder, right? So even if you think about, right, I'm most likely to overeat in the evening, can I go and work in another room? Or can I, like, can you curate your environment a little bit? Because that has such a big influence on the way that you behave, is the environment that you're sitting in.
Actually, when you just made me think, well, had a check-in, and this is why I love check-ins, but I had somebody saying almost the same thing, like, I'm finding it really hard to stop snacking. I feel myself wanting to reach for chocolate and so on. And then she literally coached herself through the rest of the check-in, which she was like, I was like, maybe it's because of this. And I was like, read on and was like, oh, you've already realized it's because of tiredness. It was just being tired. But I was like, I love the fact that you've been here long enough that you're like, it's probably this. And it was almost like a it was great, because not only are you getting help from us, but you're also using that as a bit of a journal, checking in with yourself.
Oh, 100%. Check-ins are such good journals. And often they work kind of better than a journal, because I totally get that sometimes it feels a little bit like, why am I writing this out? Like, why is it really helpful? Whatever. Whereas if you're writing it out knowing that Ruth's going to read it, you make sense of it. You work through it. You know what she's about to ask you because you've worked with her long enough. And then that you're kind of asking yourself the question, so what would she say? Okay, right. Well, and actually, I've almost come up with the solution myself from doing the check-in. But the thing is, you don't check in if you're not checking in with someone. And you want the reassurance to be like, yeah, do you know what? You're right. Because it doesn't always work like that. Sometimes, people will then go into a spiral of beating themselves up, and you're like, no. You're not a failure here. You've just sat around a load of temptation and then been surprised that when you get a bit tired, it becomes harder to resist that temptation.
Yeah. I find, you know, I find that a lot in check-ins as well, though. That kind of that's what coaching is, though. Most people know what the issue is, and they just need us to go, yeah, you're right. That's it. That's exactly what it is. It's a lot of it's that being kind of being that sounding board to somebody, just sort of being able to see the wood for the trees. Because most people can see it, but they just need that as you've said, them, as the reassurance of, yeah, I'm in the right ballpark, and I know what I need to do. I just needed to hear you go, yep, you're right.
Oh, I think, I mean, the same is true for therapy. Like, really, if anyone's ever had therapy, like, your therapist doesn't actually tell you anything. They literally just ask you more questions and, like, oh, how does that make you feel? Or how does, and then you're talking through what's in your head. And it's, I was going to say, it's so therapeutic, because that's what therapy is, right? But it is like a lot of the ideas are already in your head. Or when I have meetings with coaches on AFM, a lot of the time, like, they already have their idea in their head. They just haven't been able to conceptualize it and get it out of their head and work through it and see where the problems might be and see who they're really trying to talk to. Like, a lot of the time, it's just asking them the right questions, letting them speak, letting them come up with their own ideas that they already have, but they need to kind of work through. It's the same kind of stuff.
I feel that we would be a bit remiss to not mention that it's Easter at the weekend, because I know that in the group there are a few people saying that they're thinking about that already. And I've definitely had, because obviously children are breaking up this week from schools, most people. Most breaking up, I think, on Wednesday or Thursday. And it means that they've got a long bank holiday weekend as well. And I think that people are feeling that they're losing a bit of control. And I know that they don't have to lose control of everything, but I thought that they'd probably love to hear that from you, even though they know, really.
I didn't actually know it was Easter. What I was thinking about is its bloody Commit to Six launch. I thought that's more important than Easter.
Well, we are going to do that, but I also thought that it would be worth, because,
No, I'm not picking up on you. I actually genuinely was like, oh.
yeah, it's Easter and the schools are breaking up. Like, it's not. I just did a post on it then, because I thought actually a few people are kind of saying about it. There's a lot more people now suddenly going on, not suddenly, they probably booked it a while ago, but they're going on holidays. And it feels like for the first time in ages, I'm talking about cruise weeks again, which I haven't done for a while. And so now we're getting the people going away with their families that are trying to decide what areas to focus on. And we're also launching Commit Six, but as you know, this is like something that doesn't make like when you start, these things are always going to be there. So actually, I think it's a really good opportunity to focus on imperfect action over this bank holiday weekend and when you're away with family, but not say, I can't do
I
anything.
mean, like that's why we give you range targets, you know, because you're gonna like we're saying, you're kind of gonna do a bit of a cruise week, which would be like, let's just hit my non-negotiables. You know, if you think about your efforts as a dial that you never want to turn off, but you might have it down sometimes, right? Like if it's a gas hob, it's like, okay, cool, let's just simmer for a little bit, but we don't want to turn the gas off. And then you can turn it up again when Easter's over, or when you've got more capacity, or when there's less other things going on. And that's life. That's normal. That's how you get sustainable, maintainable results that you don't resent because you're not putting your life on hold for them.
I love that you didn't know it was Easter. Just like I like that. I know when you work for yourself, you don't the bank holidays don't really mean the same thing, do
I've never
they?
had a bank holiday. I don't even know what it means.
Well, there's one on Friday and Monday, apparently.
Very nice for people who work.
There's two extra days that you will be working.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yes, with the children off as well. Yeah, but it's exciting. It'll be fun. And then on
Yeah, I
Monday,
mean, what are you doing for Easter?
like nothing.
Well,
Nothing's changing here,
what
really.
I did for Easter, I had this saurian loaf that has a little sheep on it. I imagine it's an Easter sheep.
It probably, yeah, spring lambs, right. That's it. Might
I
have
would
some mini
say
ones.
that Easter egg chocolate does taste better than normal chocolate.
Only Cadbury's.
Special.
I'm not a big fan of like the Nestle Easter. I'm quite fussy about my chocolate. Yeah. So I'd rather just not have an Easter egg, I think, and probably have something else.
But you get, I'm sure you get Cadbury's Easter eggs.
Yeah, you do. But then I'm a bit like, oh, I'd probably just rather have the mini eggs,
Fair.
but not a cream egg.
No. Andy, are you gonna have a cream egg?
I'll have more than one. Nah, I'll not have more than one. Yeah, I probably will have a cream egg. Cream eggs are tiny now though. They're actually the size of mini eggs now. They've shrunk
Or
so
have
much.
you just grown and you're massive now?
It's so swole.
I would love to think that that was the case, but I very much unfortunately doubt it. I'm down nearly 10 kilos, so I'm getting skinnier, and it's also getting fucking colder as well. Like I'm freezing because I'm not carrying as much body fat around, so I'm Baltic most of the time. And Laura's normally worse than me, and I was got home earlier on. She was like on the sofa, and I was like, "Is it just me or is it freezing?" She went, "Just you." I was like, "Oh, cool, perfect." So
Oh,
yeah.
yeah, you
Must
must
be getting
be.
a bit chilly.
Yeah. All right then. Okay. Thank you both for your amazing brains. If anyone is interested in joining Commit to Six for the next intake, you only have a couple of days to do so. So head over to esgfitness.co.uk/commit or use the link in the show notes. And we would love to have you.
Yeah, it's exciting. Looking forward to that intake.
Whoop, whoop.